Today is Friday, February 28th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Steve Miller in Washington. As the number of people affected by the coronavirus outbreak continues to climb, the head of the WHO issues a word of caution.
No country should assume it won't get cases. That could be a fatal mistake, and quite literally.
Plus, Turkish officials say nearly two dozen soldiers have been killed in an airstrike by Syrian government forces in northeast Syria. We'll have all of those stories and a whole lot more next. The Director General of the World Health Organization warns the coronavirus epidemic has reached a decisive point, and all countries must prepare for the possibility of a global pandemic of this respiratory disease. The latest figures reported to WHO from China are 78,630 cases of COVID-19 in that country, including 2,747 deaths. Outside of China, there are 3,474 reported cases in 44 countries and 54 deaths. Lisa Schlein now starts us off from Geneva.
The World Health Organization reports the number of new infections of coronavirus appears to be on the decline in China, while the disease is spreading more rapidly around the globe. In the past 2 days, it says the number of new cases reported in the rest of the world has exceeded the number of new cases reported in China. And within the past day, seven new countries have reported their first case of COVID-19. WHO Chief Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus acknowledges this is a matter of concern, but he notes the virus can be contained if all nations take the right measures.
If you act aggressively now, you can contain this virus. You can prevent people getting sick. You can save lives. So my advice to these countries is to move swiftly. Aggressive early measures can prevent transmission before the virus gets a foothold.
Tedros says WHO advocates a comprehensive approach. He says this virus does not respect borders, and nations must seek to prevent cases from infiltrating their territory. At the same time, he says they must have a plan ready to care for those who are sick and for stopping the virus from infecting others.
Every country needs to be ready to detect cases early, to isolate patients, trace contacts, provide quality clinical care, prevent hospital outbreaks, and prevent community transmission.
Tedros says COVID-19 has pandemic potential, but there is still time to prevent country epidemics from developing into a global pandemic. He says WHO is providing countries with the tools they need to help them prepare for this eventuality. He notes WHO is shipping testing kits and personal protective equipment to dozens of countries. He says the agency has trained more than 80,000 health workers through online courses and is helping countries learn how to prevent, detect, and manage cases. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
In Africa, Nigeria has now confirmed its first COVID-19 patient. It's an Italian who traveled from Milan, Italy, to Lagos. As U.S. President Donald Trump urges calm over a potential virus outbreak, Democrats wonder whether his administration is ready to handle what may come next. AP Washington correspondent Sagar Magani takes things from here.
The president yesterday tried to minimize fears of an outbreak.
I don't think it's inevitable.
Even as health officials warned infections are coming. Shortly after, the government announced one in California, apparently unconnected to overseas travel or contact with another patient. New Jersey's Bill Pascrell is among Democrats questioning whether the administration's up to the task.
I don't see a plan to manage the risk.
The president yesterday blasted House Speaker Nancy Pelosi for echoing those doubts.
I think Speaker Pelosi's incompetent.
This morning, she called for a bipartisan response to the virus.
Lives are at stake. This is not a time for name calling.
Sagar Magani, Washington.
Speaking of California, that state is monitoring more than 8,400 people for coronavirus symptoms after the arrival on commercial flights. The state on Wednesday reported the case of unknown origin, making it potentially the first incident of the virus spreading within U.S. communities. Stock markets across the globe dropped sharply again Thursday for the fourth straight day of plummeting values, prompted by fears of the growing spread of the coronavirus and its effect on international commerce. European markets dropped more than 3% for the day, while key exchanges in New York were down more than 2% in late-day trading. Asian markets finished mixed on Thursday. Arab media are reporting that the spread of the coronavirus in Iran has pushed that country's currency to lows not seen in almost a year. Iranian health officials say there are more than 200 confirmed cases in that country and at least 26 deaths. Edward Uranian has that part of the story.
Turkey, Armenia, Oman, Bahrain, Kuwait, and the United Arab Emirates have all closed land and air borders with Iran in recent days due to the coronavirus. As the closures stop the flow of traffic to and from Iran, fears of a deepening economic slump are hitting Iran's national currency, the rial. Arab media say the rial fell to 158,500 to the dollar on the black market Wednesday, its lowest level in over a year. The rial's official peg is 42,000 to the dollar. Many economists fear that both Iran's oil and non-oil exports will be hit by a regional trade slump due to the virus. Religious tourism to Iran's holy sites will also be affected by border closures and quarantines around public places. Sales during the normally robust pre-Nowruz New Year's festival are falling. Despite the downward pressure on Iran's economy, President Hassan Rouhani told journalists Thursday that the country until recently had been thriving. He says that both industry and agriculture did very well during the past several months. He adds that the economy will flourish if Iranians do not let U.S. sanctions or the coronavirus have a psychological impact on their behavior. Despite the president's optimism, state TV showed Iranians in the capital, Tehran, swarming a pharmacy in pursuit of flu medication and face masks. Panic buying was also reported at some other businesses. Former Iranian President Abul Hassan Bani Sadr tells VOA that almost everything necessary to fight the virus outbreak is missing in Iran, and ordinary people blame their government and U.S. sanctions for the current crisis. He adds that the Iranian economy depends on trade with its neighbors, so you can just imagine the poverty that is facing the Iranian people if trade diminishes with its partners like Turkey, Iraq, Russia, and elsewhere. An Iranian member of parliament recently blamed Tehran's eagerness to come to the rescue of its major trading partner, China, for shortages inside his own country. Iran sent thousands of face masks to China during the initial phase of the coronavirus outbreak and now faces a severe shortage at home. Iranians laments former President Bani Sadr have no confidence in the regime or its propaganda, and even less faith that the outside world will come to their rescue. Edward Uranian for VOA News, Cairo.
Saudi Arabia has closed off its holiest sites in Islam to foreign pilgrims over the coronavirus, disrupting travels for thousands of Muslims already headed to the kingdom and potentially affecting plans later this year for millions more ahead of the fasting month of Ramadan and the annual Hajj pilgrimage. Outside of China, the COVID-19 has significantly affected South Korea. Earlier, I spoke to Jeff Kim, the owner of an after-school academy in Seoul, to learn about how the outbreak is affecting him.
For me, because I'm always like cautious these days on the people I meet in my daily routines. You know, of course, I wash my hands more often than any time in my life and sanitizer everywhere. You know, it's really hard to see the sanitizers, right, in Korea. Well, if you go to a hospital or clinics, then you can see it, but not in a bank or like supermarkets. Okay, today.
Well, I remember back in the early, late 2000s, right, when we had the H1N1 virus, and you had the Purell stands outside elevators and in building entrances, and even at bus stops, you know, so people could, you know, keep their hands germ free. So you're saying you're seeing more of that?
More of that, yes, more of that everywhere. And they offer the sanitizers, and they ask me if they, you know, if I wash my hands. And, you know, it's very funny that I feel kind of like safe washing my hands and sanitizing right after. and we don't really shake the hands, you know, as like a business meetings. We just, you know, bump. And of course, it's hard to see people without wearing a mask on the street. And it's funny, you know, nowadays I can't read people's like emotions, you know, which we normally get from the facial expressions, right? But they all now wear masks. So it's really hard.
One of my colleagues recently traveled from Seoul to the United States, and he felt pressured to wear a mask on the plane. Is there a social, drive to wear masks, even though some health professionals say that wearing a mask doesn't necessarily give you any extra protection?
You must wear a mask, and if you don't wear a mask, people will look weird. And it's a mandatory right now in Korea. And it's funny, it's really hard to get a mask in the markets. It's all sold out. And so what we do is there's always like a daily deals. So they open 7 or like a 9 in the morning, like through the website, and they sell only like limited masks, like only 10,000 masks per day.
You're also a business owner. You know, you have an after school academy. Mm-mm-mm. How's that being, you know, affected by this?
The Ministry of Education postponed the new school year, right? So the start day of the school, it's March 9, which is like 1 week later than like initially planned, as you know. The private school like us, like a JLS, we kind of follow their order, but it's not the mandatory, but they suggest us to like close down the school for like a week. So, but it's really hard decisions because, you know, we get tuitions from the students.
That was Jeff Kim speaking to me from Seoul. And speaking of schools, Prime Minister Shinzo Abe asked Japanese schools to close from March 2nd until the start of the next term in April. I spoke to reporter James Sims in Tokyo about that.
The national government is saying, you know, we're requesting that you do this. I know some local governments have already taken that step ahead of the time. And so the big concern is, you know, so what do people do if both parents are working? The government has said, well, you know, we're requesting that companies be flexible. But in some cases, you know, companies, they just don't have the extra staff where they can say, OK, well, you can take off a half a week, you know, to go take care of your children or your kid. And so there's big questions in terms of what's going to happen there. You know, and if you're a parent, you know that like daycare centers and preschools and kindergartens, I mean, it's, you know, you catch everything as a parent. So I don't know if you're going to shut the schools, you know, from first grade through high school. It seems like you should do something for, you know, the younger children. And some of those kids are obviously going to have weaker immune systems, too.
You know, overall, how do you think this is going to affect life for many people throughout Japan?
Well, I mean, I think that you have to break that into several sort of pieces. You know, there's the economic impact, and then there's just sort of the daily life impact. So, you know, there are big concerns about the economic impact just because of things like supply chains being shut down, you know, from China for components, as well as the basically ending of Chinese tourists coming to Japan. And then in terms of the schools, I think at this point of the year, most of the kids are done with most of their work. And so, you know, they'll be able to graduate. And, you know, they'll be going into a longer break, and things don't really pick up until, like, I think mid to late April in terms of school. So there's sort of a buffer zone there. But the question is, you know, whether if this continues much longer than expected, or there's also a question of whether there are people that, you know, get the coronavirus, it goes into remission, then it comes back, or if it's able to spread even if once people are supposedly over it. And then sort of longer term, there's a big question mark over the Olympics, especially after the comments by an Olympic committee member saying that the Olympics, whether it's a no-go or a go, would have to be decided, you know, at the latest by the end of May. I mean, the government, I think, is very worried because, especially for the Abe administration, I mean, it's sort of considered his graduation because he's coming, you know, towards the end of his tenure, probably as prime minister. So the government has said that, you know, nothing has been decided regarding, or that no decision has been made to postpone the Olympics or anything. I mean, they need to think about the actual sort of health impacts, as well as, you know, Japan's sort of stature in the world in trying to deal with something like this ahead of a major global event like the Olympics.
That was James Sims speaking to me from Tokyo, Japan. Dr. David Weber is a professor of medicine and the divisions of infectious diseases at the University of North Carolina School of Medicine. With everything going on today, I asked him that while the WHO sounds cautiously optimistic about the COVID-19, that it can be beaten, what concerns did he still have?
The obvious concern is, you know, up until last week, it looked like the virus was essentially confined to China, with, you know, some unusual things like the cruise ship in Diamond Princess in Japan. But just in the last week, we have obviously seen a substantial transmission. So I think that, you know, we'll know, I think, by the end of the week. But I think there is substantial concern that we are going to have to move from containment, meaning keep it in one area. Don't let any new people contract disease. And then much like we saw with SARS, you know, it would essentially burn itself out. We may need to move, obviously, to mitigation, meaning, yes, we're going to see this widespread, or at least spread through much of the world, hopefully in not an explosive fashion. And we'll need to move to mitigation, to early detection, early therapy, protecting older individuals, those with comorbidities. So I think right now the issue is not what's happening in China. As you know, for the last week plus, the number of actual cases per day has been going down. So it's clear that China is certainly managing their outbreak.
What about continents like Africa that have already been dealing with significant health crises who may not have as robust health systems?
There are only a few labs in Africa that are capable of actually doing testing, both for proper management and protection of our healthcare personnel and proper diagnosis for you. And it's not clear that that ability would exist in Africa. That's one issue. And then, as you already pointed out, a separate issue is that if you already sick with one underlying disease, malaria, malnutrition, dysentery, we do know that with this virus, there are higher illness rates, more severe illness, and higher death rates.
That was UNC School of Medicine Professor Dr. David Weber. And still to come later on the program.
That is not an economy that's working for the American people. That's an economy working for the 1%. We're going to create an economy for all.
You're listening to VOA News.
This is Science in a Minute.
The Breakthrough Listen Initiative has been scanning the sky since 2016 to spot communication that might be transmitted by possible intelligent extraterrestrial beings. The Breakthrough Listen Initiative recently released a collection of data that was gathered by the project's most wide-ranging survey of radio emissions. A Pennsylvania State University-led team is working to find out if extraterrestrials could be employing the transiting method, which our scientists have successfully used to spot exoplanets in order to find Earth. Researchers are studying the Breakthrough Listen data to examine radio signals from 20 nearby stars that align with the plane of Earth's orbit, conditions that would allow extraterrestrials from around those stars to detect Earth. So far, the Penn State team and others have found no signs of extraterrestrial civilizations. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Steve Miller. Turkish officials say 29 soldiers were killed in an airstrike by Syrian government forces in northeast Syria. The deaths mark a serious escalation in the direct conflict between Turkish and Russian-backed Syrian forces that has been waged since early February. As swarms of locusts rapidly multiply, a lack of supplies means East African countries are struggling to contain the plague that threatens food security for millions of people. Reuters' David Doyle has that story.
In a region where 19 million people already go hungry, the UN's Food and Agricultural Organization representative to Kenya says it's a disaster that eclipses all others.
Desert locust situation is an unprecedented threat on food security.
A single square kilometer swarm can eat as much food in a day as 35,000 people. And the FAO warned last month that, left unchecked, the number of locusts in East Africa could explode by 500 times by June. The FAO says containing the plague will cost at least $138 million. So far, donors have pledged $52 million.
That was Reuters reporter David Doyle. A British court is still considering whether Julian Assange should be extradited to the United States to face espionage charges. Nicholas Pinault reports Assange's European legal team intends to seek political asylum in France for the individual.
The high-profile case of Julian Assange has brought a number of lawyers who claim to defend a man who considers himself a whistleblower. In France, one of the members of this legal team wants President Emmanuel Macron to grant asylum to Assange, who is jailed in London and faces extradition to the United States. Éric Dupond-Moretti, a well-known French lawyer, claims the current process is unfair. Assange will spend the rest of his life in a U.S. prison, if convicted. He explains that the United States want to have a political process and that freedom of press is threatened with this case. He says the Constitution of the United States will prevent the prosecution of a U.S. citizen for such facts. This case is a concern for all journalists, non-U.S. citizens around the world. Dupond-Moretti says the U.S. Supreme Court stated clearly in different decisions that freedom of expression cannot be prosecuted, as it is the case with Assange. In London, a lawyer of the United States accused Julian Assange of risking the lives of intelligence sources by publishing classified U.S. government documents. Assange faces charges under the U.S. Espionage Act for the 2010 release via his website of a trove of files detailing the realities of U.S. military campaigns in Afghanistan and Iraq. Organizations supporting the WikiLeaks founder call it a bogus argument. Rebecca Vincent is the Britain Bureau Director for Reporters Without Borders.
Whether it should be a matter of criminal offense to leak information, the question of a public interest defense is really important. So, of course, it is the prerogative of states. Some information must be confidential. But the thing is, when the information leaked is in the public interest, when it contributes to journalism and in fact, political change on the basis of revelations that the public has the right to know, we consider that a matter of press freedom and we will defend it. So that's very much the case with Mr. Assange.
In 2010, WikiLeaks also released hundreds of thousands of documents in their original form, including the secret identities of diplomats and local sources. It was a shocking revelation that brought to light some U.S. intelligence operations, including spying on leaders from foreign countries such as France or Germany. For that specific reason, some French lawmakers think Julian Assange should be rewarded with asylum in France. Jean-Christophe Lagarde, a centrist French representative, is one of them. He said that even if the United States has been an ally of France before Donald Trump came to power, the French cannot trust them because to defend their own interests, the Americans can spy on foreign leaders. Lagarde says he thinks it is a red flag between democracies. For that, he says, some countries should give Julian Assange the proper recognition for releasing American secrets. Julian Assange's legal battle in Britain is far from over, as the hearing is expected to take several weeks before the judge make a decision on his case. Nicolas Pinault for VOA News, Paris.
At least 32 people have been killed in the deadliest violence to engulf India's capital of New Delhi in decades. It's a heavy deployment of security forces brought an uneasy calm Thursday. That's the latest revision in the death toll from clashes earlier this week. Arun Astana in New Delhi has more.
The numbers are going up because many of the people who were injured those days were in the hospital, and now they are reported died. So the number today as it stands for right now is 38, which includes one police personnel and one intelligence officer. Arun Astana, New Delhi, India.
The United States Democratic Party finds itself at a crossroads at a critical time in the 2020 election cycle. At the core of the Democrats' dilemma is a sharp divide between the party's progressive wing and the moderates, as we hear from VOA national correspondent Jim Malone.
The liberal-moderate split was on full display during the latest Democratic debate in South Carolina, broadcast by CBS News.
Tom, I think she was talking about my plan, not yours.
Frontrunner Bernie Sanders defended the core vision of his campaign, that government take the lead to improve the lives of all Americans.
That is not an economy that's working for the American people. That's an economy working for the 1%. We're going to create an economy for all, not just wealthy campaign contributors.
But Sanders got plenty of pushback in the debate from moderates who fear his nomination would send the party to defeat in November against President Trump. Former South Bend, Indiana Mayor Pete Buttigieg was among those sounding the alarm.
I mean, look, if you think the last 4 years has been chaotic, divisive, toxic, exhausting, imagine spending the better part of 2020 with Bernie Sanders versus Donald Trump. Think about what that will be like for this country.
But Sanders and his supporters argue his success shows the Democratic Party has moved to the left since 2016 and is drawing in younger and more engaged voters. Analyst John Fortier.
Well, I think he has some strength. He has a good core of people who are going to be with him no matter where he is, and he's likely to do very well winning or coming in second in states ahead. So he's in a pretty strong position.
But as Sanders rises, moderate Democrats like Jim Kessler grow more concerned.
If you add up the moderate votes together in the early primaries, more people are voting for moderates. For a moderate, for a mainstream candidate to win, that number needs to consolidate in terms of who's vying for those votes.
Moderates like Buttigieg, former Vice President Joe Biden, Minnesota Senator Amy Klobuchar, and former New York City Mayor Michael Bloomberg believe Trump and his Republican supporters would be thrilled if Sanders won the Democratic nomination. Analyst Matthew Dalek.
They would be able to kind of exploit Sanders, some of his past positions, Medicare for all. So I think it's a much a bigger target politically for the Republicans to have someone like a Bernie Sanders at the top of the ticket.
We cannot continue to have a president who is a pathological liar.
Sanders will continue to have an advantage in the primary race as long as the moderate contenders fail to rally around one candidate, says Darrell West.
All of them have certain advantages, but certain minuses as well. And I think for one of the moderates to defeat Sanders, the field is really going to have to coalesce around one of those individuals.
The Democratic race is now in a crucial stage, with numerous primaries in larger states coming up over the next several weeks with a few thousand delegates at stake. Jim Malone, VOA News, Washington.
And that's going to do it for us today. You've been listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. On behalf of our director, Tracy Carter, and engineer, Tony Pollack, thank you very much for listening. Be sure to visit our website for in-depth coverage of world events and news 24 hours a day. You can do so by pointing your web browser to voanews.com. Until next time, I'm Steve Miller in Washington. Have a great day.
This is VOA News. I'm